Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Tuesday, August 11th. I watched the first episode of Ted Lasso, season 4, last night, and if you haven't seen the show, here's a quick version. It's an American football coach who goes to London to coach a men's soccer team with zero experience in the sport, and the team becomes successful over about 3 seasons. At the end of season 3, the coach, Ted Lasso, goes back to the United States. And season 4 picks up with him returning to London to coach the women's team at the same club. They did tease this at the end of season 3, and I'll be honest with you, I thought it was like a joke that they were just putting this in there because it's Apple TV, it's an Apple show. So it's like Apple wants to show that they care about men and women. So that's what I originally thought it was. But I started to dig deeper because I wanted to understand whether women's sports are actually a business now or if they're still being treated like a cause. Some people say that no one watches women's sports, and others will say that it's the fastest growing segment of the entire sports industry. I wanted to see what the numbers actually say, and as it turns out, the numbers are a lot more interesting than either side of that argument actually acknowledges. Okay, so let's get into it. The growth numbers in women's sports over the past 3 years are unlike anything that's happened in American professional sports in decades, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that. The team valuations for the WNBA, or Women's National Basketball Association, have gone up 52% in a single year, from an average of $272 million to $414 million per franchise. The 13 existing teams are now collectively worth $5.4 billion. In the 29 years that Forbes has been valuing professional sports teams, only one published ranking has ever had better year-over-year growth. The NBA's 74% jump after Steve Ballmer paid $2 billion for the LA Clippers in 2014. The WNBA didn't have one inflection point like that, though. The growth has actually been building steadily and accelerating, which is very promising for that organization. The WNBA viewership numbers in 2025 averaged 969,000 per nationally televised game, which is actually the league's best mark since 1998, and higher than the NHL or National Hockey League's average for nationally televised games. That's pretty incredible. Attendance for WNBA games was up 34% to 3.15 million total. If you're a sports fan, the first name that probably came into your head is Caitlin Clark, and I will get to that. But before that, let's move on to soccer. The NWSL, or National Women's Soccer League, saw viewership increase fivefold between 2023 and 2024. Ready for a crazy stat? In 2024, the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship drew more viewership numbers than the Men's National Championship. This is the first time that this has happened in tournament history. And across WNBA, NCAA Women's Basketball, and the National Women's Soccer League, they say that fans consumed roughly 370 million viewer hours in 2024, which is up 430% since 2021. So, people watch women's sports. The data on this is not ambiguous. New WNBA expansion franchises are selling for $250 million each. Angel City FC, an NWSL team that didn't exist 4 years ago, is valued at $340 million. 86% of sponsors surveyed said that their women's sports partnerships met or exceeded expectations. The nobody watches argument doesn't survive contact with the numbers. Now let's talk about the pay gap, because we hear that one all the time. The audience numbers are clear, but the money flowing to the players tells a different story, and this is the part that I think matters the most. The average NBA salary is about $10.8 million. Not bad living, huh? Well, the average WNBA salary, women's basketball, is about 120 grand. Look, that's not a bad living, but that's a 90x difference. And the instinct that most people have is to explain that gap by pointing to the revenue difference. They'll say the NBA generates about $13 billion in annual revenue, while the WNBA generates about $180 to $200 million, which is roughly a 50x difference. So the revenue gap is 50x, but the salary gap is 90x, which means the WNBA players are actually getting a smaller share of their league's revenue than NBAs get out of theirs. Now let's talk about Caitlin Clark, because she is the clearest example. So her arrival in the WNBA is credited with generating an estimated $1.6 billion in increased league and franchise valuation. Just a quick background on her. She played college basketball at the University of Iowa, and she was a phenom. If you know Steph Curry, his three-point shooting ability, she was basically that. She would not miss. She was shooting from the three-point line, and she drew a ton of attention and excitement from fans. Well, anyway, again, she generated $1.6 billion in increased league and franchise valuation, but her rookie salary was under $80,000. The disconnect between what she generates for the league and what the league pays her is so large that it's become its own talking point. But it reflects a structural issue that goes beyond any just one player. The WNBA's new collective bargaining agreement, which starts in 2026, includes the first comprehensive revenue-sharing model in women's professional sports history. And it's modeled after the NBA structure, where roughly 50% of basketball-related income goes to the players. If the WNBA moves from its current revenue share, which has been estimated around 20%, and if they move it to 50%, average salaries would more than double. But doubling $120,000 is still $240,000. Again, really good money, but it's still a third of what the average MLS player earns and a fraction of what NBA players earn. The NWSL, again, the Women's Soccer League, has a similar dynamic. The average salary is about $117,000 compared to $660,000 for the men. The league just announced plans to commit $115 million to additional player compensation under its current CBA, or Collective Bargaining Agreement, which is real and a meaningful step, but the gap between the growth in attention and the growth in player pay still remains wide. Now let's get into the business case, because all these leagues need investors. And the question that these investors are asking right now isn't whether women's sports are popular, because as we talked about, the viewership data settles that. It's whether the economics will eventually look like men's sports, or whether there's a ceiling that keeps them permanently smaller. The case for continued growth is very strong. The WNBA just signed an 11-year media deal worth $2.2 billion, which is roughly three times the value of its previous deal. Five new expansion franchises are planned by 2030, each paying $250 million for the right to join, which is the revenue the league gets before selling a single ticket. That's really good. Sponsorship money is flowing in at rates that are growing faster than men's sports sponsorships, partly because brands see women's sports as an underpriced market where their dollars go further and the audience is highly engaged. The case for a ceiling is that the revenue base is still tiny relative to men's leagues, and media rights, which are the single largest revenue driver in professional sports, are still orders of magnitude smaller for women's leagues. The WNBA's $2.2 billion over 11 years works out to about $200 mil a year. The NBA's current media deal? Well, that's $7.6 billion per year, with a B, billion. Television money is what funds player salaries in every major sports. And until women's media deals get significantly larger, the salary gap will persist even as the audience grows. So just remember that. The honest assessment is that women's sports are in the early innings of a business that looks a lot like men's sports did 30 to 40 years ago. The NBA was not always a $13 billion league. In the early 1980s, the NBA Finals aired on tape delay because the networks didn't think enough people would watch it live. The growth trajectory for women's sports is steeper than men's leagues experienced at the same stage, which means the question isn't whether the business gets bigger, but by how fast, and whether the athletes playing right now will benefit from the growth that they're creating, or whether players like Caitlin Clark, making $80,000 a year while generating $1.6 billion in revenue and value, will move on before she can see the benefit. To be fair, Caitlin Clark has made a ton of money from the WNBA. Actually, it's mainly through her sponsorship deals, but she is getting paid. So, and I think she'll continue to get paid from brand deals going forward. But let's close this one out. Ted Lasso Season 4 is about a coach building a women's soccer team at the same club where the men's team already succeeded. And the show is probably going to explore a lot of the dynamics that we cover today. They've only released one episode, so I promise I really don't know anything. So we'll see. The audience for women's sports is there, and it's growing faster than any segment of the industry. The business is following, with $1 billion media deals and $250 million expansion fees for new teams. The piece that hasn't caught up yet is player compensation, and the math on why is pretty straightforward. The revenue base is still smaller relative to men's leagues, even though it's growing faster. Whether that gap closes in 5 years or 20 is the question that everyone from investors to athletes to fans watching right now are trying to figure out. So until then, stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.